This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 16, Playing Different Lines. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we help some batsmen who have trouble with playing different lines of balls, from all the way outside off stump to the one aimed directly at the body. We also talk about the relationship between coaches, captains, and assistant coaches, and we all get jealous of Gareth in a sunny location. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide, of course, to better cricket, whether you're a coach or whether you're a player. We are here for half an hour or so to help you out, answer a few questions and help you get to the bottom of those problems that you're having with your game. My name's David Hinchliffe. I look after things here, and helping me to help you is the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers. How are we?
Very well, thanks. Enjoying the sunshine down here. Fantastic. Had a bit of cricket, which has been good. We had a lovely day out on the Isle of Wight yesterday with the boys over at Ryde School, which was quite good fun. And it seems like we're finally getting into a little bit of summer.
Yeah, fantastic. And games being played and people running around, and the enthusiasm is always high at this time of year for us in the Northern Hemisphere. So keep that going. And secondly, on the line from very, very far away this week, certainly from me anyway, it's the Director of Cricket Coaching at Mealfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Gareth. Where are you today?
I'm in Barbados today. I've been here for the last few days working with the ECB, who are working in collaboration with the West Indies Cricket Board, delivering an ECB Level 3 out here for some absolutely brilliant blokes that have come from all of the islands. A lot of legends of West Indies cricket coming on the course. We've got Courtney Walsh, we've got Tony Gray, we've got Winston Benjamin, a variety of others that have played international cricket. Their thirst for knowledge has just been amazing, and it's been a fantastic experience for us to be involved in.
I've been doing a lot of coaching at my club, and as the only coach there, sometimes it can get quite hard work, you know, when you've got 25 people you've got to look after and you're on your own there, and you're relying on people to understand their own game. But this week I've had some help in the form of a new coach who's come along to help out and do some stuff. He's a senior player, but he's also a very good coach as well. And so it got me interested in that kind of relationship that you have as a coach with other people. So, you know, the captain is obviously a key one, and so is working with other coaches, you know, helping allocate your resources, if you like. So, Lavers, I know that this happens a lot with you. It's happened in club cricket, it's happened in school cricket. So what's kind of your thoughts on that coach relationship with other coaches and captains as well?
Well, it's a really valuable one, because it's the sort of thing that if you get it right, you can create a very productive environment where you achieve a lot in terms of sessions and in performances. Whereas if you don't get it right, then it becomes a little bit disjointed. Then it can be fairly unproductive in terms of the effort that's put in and the kind of the outcome that's being produced. So if you can, the first thing we've got to do is just get a bit of consistency. So the relationship between coach and captain, which is obviously a very pivotal one, has got to be a pretty close relationship, and ideally singing from the same hymn sheet. However, it's not vital that you have the same beliefs on everything, and that's one area where some coaches may like to have someone who is going to mirror their thoughts exactly. But I'm a bit of a believer in that the more ideas that you can bring to the group, the better. That's the group as a group of kind of off the field in terms of the captain, the coach, the assistant coach. And between you, as long as you've got a process in place where you're selecting, you're deciding on tactics, so you're thinking about player roles and player performances and reviews and things like that, as long as you've got some consistency in that and you communicate well amongst yourself, then the different ways you look at the game become very useful, as opposed to being quite conflicting. So In your case, I imagine, David, you've got an assistant coach, which is probably a delightful start. And it's first of all
fabulous
working out where you want them to come in and what position you want them to take. So for us at the school, we have lots of coaches involved, but we have people who fit certain molds. So certain people will take a lead when it comes to the fielding type of things. Certain people will take a lead when it comes to batting or bowling as well. And certain people will obviously be adaptable and they'll fit the age group that they're working with. So my role will be effectively working with different groups depending on the other coaches I've got around me. So for instance, if I work with an under 14 group, I fit a certain role of working with the bowlers. If I'm working with the under 15s, it's a management role because we have coaches in there who are pretty good technically on the batting and the bowling side. So my role will be quite diverse and quite flexible, but I guess it's deciding what can those assistants bring to you and what can the captain bring to you. The other thing that's really important for us is how regularly we meet. Talking within sessions is all very good, but it does come distracted by what's going on. And also it means that you're potentially not committing as much as you could to the session you're in. So having a bit of time away from the session where you can speak either one-to-one with that coach or with that captain, or as a group of three or four of you who may be involved in these kind of coaching-related matters, is really important. And obviously with you, you've got one guy, and it might be you can meet up once a week, it might be you can meet up once a month. You have to kind of decide on what you feel is relevant. With us at school, if we try and get the whole group together, there might be 10 or 12 people that we're kind of involving, and to make that happen on a weekly basis is pretty difficult. But we try and make sure that each half term, especially the beginning of the first half term of cricket in terms of the season, the end of that half term or the beginning of the next one, and then the end. So probably three group meetings throughout a summer works pretty well. And then there's lots of kind of smaller meetings and more informal things that go on. But that communication channel is really important, that people are aware of what they're working towards and aware of what their role is in trying to get players achieving the goals that are set out. But it'd be interesting to see how yours goes, because again, it's a new guy, and it'll be interesting to see what he can bring to the table.
Yeah, I think the first thing, and I'm sure that you guys have got experience of this as well, but is to set roles, responsibilities, really. And I do that every year. And in order to do that really well, we have to look at the different skill sets that we've got between us, really. So, for example, last year I worked with an assistant coach at school who wasn't really a cricket coach, was a rugby coach predominantly. So I gave him the role of doing some people development stuff, because rugby do that very well, and he had a good ear and good eye for developing people. And second, he gave him some of the responsibilities around organising the logistics, making sure everybody knew what time things were. And I concentrated more on the cricket side. But the interesting thing for me is that those responsibilities can shift a little bit, because the more Josh got into his cricket, the more insightful he became with his views on it, the more he saw the crossovers between his sport of rugby and cricket. And I gave him more latitude in some of the areas that initially I put down as being my responsibility, and it worked absolutely brilliantly. So whilst we can have roles and responsibilities, we've got to flex a little bit, because the people that you work with, particularly assistant coaches, pick up skills very quickly that maybe they didn't know they had in the first place. And it would be silly for me to just to keep doing what we put down on the bit of paper when somebody else's skills could be utilised in different ways over the course of a season.
And how formal do you set these roles? So obviously, as you said, flexibility is key. But how often do you have them? How much do you sort of write them down? How much detail do you use? And then how much do you review those on a formal basis rather than say, oh, it's turning out in another way, so let's just slightly shift things?
Yeah, I write it down. I think it's really important that people have that, and you've got something to refer to. And often, if there are going to be some grey areas, those grey areas are going to occur in the first couple of weeks of working together. So really important to have those in place. And then, as you say, it probably becomes, or certainly in my case anyway, I can only talk from my own experience, but it certainly becomes a bit more informal, and that flexing happens on an informal basis rather than a formalised one towards the end of the season and in mid-season. But initially, I think that document's really useful just to keep referring to and make sure that nothing is missed.
Yeah, exactly. And also people, both sides understand what, you know, what the requirements are, I suppose, as well. Because if one person is thinking one thing and one person is thinking something else, then that can get confusing quickly. But if it's noted down somewhere, you can say, well, you know, this is what we were aiming for. Do we think we should review it, or are we going along the right lines here?
I think that's right, mate. And the other thing is to consider the players need to know who does what as well. It's not just the two people that are in that working relationship that it relates to. The players want to know exactly who they go. So if it's about the travel arrangements for the next game, and in our case, it's parents as well, isn't it, when you're dealing with younger players? If it's travel arrangements or change of start time, you want them to be able to go directly to the source rather than having to go around the houses, because it's inefficient on everybody's time. And we all know how important volunteers time is, because that work mostly as coaches around the world, you know, and not everybody gets paid like myself and Labour's are very lucky to be, but so it's really important on their time, and we keep it as efficient as possible, and everybody knows exactly who does what. So it's not just for the guy who's the assistant coach and the coach, it's for the players and their parents as well.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with the yes-no round, three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more the team want to say. I've got the questions, so let's fire away. First question, failure is preparation for victory.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question, all players need brutal strength and conditioning.
No.
No.
Third question, every criticism is an opinion.
No.
Yes.
And now we are going to open up the mailbag for another week. A couple of questions that have been sent in to us over email or possibly through our Facebook page or the Pitch Vision website. And we answer those questions, or do our best to do that at least. And then the best question of the week wins a prize of an online coaching course from Pitch Vision at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions into us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, and there's other ways to get in touch, which we'll talk about at the end of the show. And Alex is the first person to do that, and it's an age-old question. He says, how can I judge a bowler's ball's line outside off stump or on the off stump, whether to play or whether to leave the ball? So, classic one, that, you know, corridor of uncertainty. Which ones do you go at and which ones do you let go by?
Well, a lot of the time here, this comes to your positioning, your understanding of where your positioning is and where your eyes are and where your body is in relation to that off stump. And, you know, the battle for the off stump and for the line of fourth stump is probably the most crucial one when you're facing seamers in particular. The more awareness you've got of where everything is, the better we are at doing precisely what you're asking here, which is whether to play or whether to leave the ball. It's really difficult if we don't have a relationship with off stump, with our eyes, and we haven't got a clue where they are when they sit behind us. It's very difficult for us to make appropriate decisions. And I think anybody who's played for long enough would have been victim of one that may be nipped back or a little bit of misjudgment. But generally, the best players are the one that have an eye position. Their outside eye will be somewhere on off stump or middling off by the time that they finish their trigger movement or got into their ready position. And that will give them a really good frame of reference for where their off stump is. I think it's difficult sometimes to know where your off stump is if your eyes and your outside eye is over middle stump or middling leg by the time the ball is released. I think it's tough to be able to have a real appreciation of where off stump is. So most of the best players in the world, when they face that ball in normal play, when they're looking for judgment of off stump, be very important. You'll find that their outside eye is over the top of off stump or over middle and off.
And Lavers, how important is it to be still, as in not moving from side to side. You're moving your head from side to side, because it's a classic piece of advice, isn't it? You know, head still, eyes level, and that allows you to pick up the delivery more quickly. Is that still valid advice these days?
Yeah, there's lots of value in it. Obviously, the repetition is key, and if we're going to have that relationship, as Gareth referred to it there, with off stump, then we need to make sure that it's one that is consistent. If we're setting up on off stump and we're on the move, and by the time we get there we're either slightly beyond it or slightly inside it, then there's going to be a little bit of inconsistency, and subsequently our judgment is going to be slightly impaired. So first of all, what we've got to do is be consistent. Now, there could be a little bit of movement in there sometimes with people, and more often than not that's slightly up or down or forwards and backwards, but sometimes you might find that batsmen are still on the move from the leg side to the offside, which is the more traditional method that people like to do, and maybe they haven't completed any trigger movement they might have. Personally, I'd be looking to try and get rid of any sideways movement prior to the ball being released. So that would be the ideal for me, to make sure that any movement which does take place across the pitch, which is fine and will help some people in the way they're going to move, would be completed, and then they're fairly still by the time the ball is being released. That way we're going to get a higher likelihood of consistency. If we move at the same distance with our feet, at the same time with our feet, and equally with our head, then we're going to find that we're in a position that we can reproduce over and over again. And if we can do that, we can judge the ball over and over again. And that's the key, isn't it? Because one little slip here, one little error doesn't kind of give a chance. One little error we're probably going to be out. It's going to be off pole, out of the ground, isn't it? Because we're judging these fine lines. So it's something where consistency is king, really. And I guess 99 out of 100 is maybe a number that we're happy with. But if we're looking at Test cricket, they're probably looking at 999 out of 1,000, and probably high percentages than that. So it's got to be something we reproduce over and over and over again.
And of course, there's the tactical concern, isn't there? I mean, leaving the ball is a less popular pastime than it used to be, especially with the growth of 2020 cricket and limited overs, 50 over, 40 over cricket. The leave is something which is not used as often as it is in longer format games or games where a draw is possible. So there's that tactical concern as well of, yes, knowing where the line is and then knowing whether you're going to go for it or not is the next question, isn't it? Because if it's the last over of a 2020 match, you're not going to be doing too many leaves.
You know, you'd be rare, wouldn't it, to see that. But I also do think it's a skill that we need to really practice. Because if you think about 50-over cricket, and a lot of people play 50-over cricket around the world, that's a lot of deliveries to be able to manage as a group of 11 batters with 10 opportunities to lose wickets. And ideally, we need our top order players to be playing the majority of those balls if we're going to get the scores that we see on the television nowadays, and they are becoming, we see that in club cricket, don't we? They're becoming more and more common to have massive scores. So your top order players have got to have a way of managing a delivery initially when you've got 300 available to you to use as a team. You've got to be able to leave the odd ball, and it is a skill. And to me, this is where the delivery skill of the coach comes into play. So yes, you can do this with bowling machines and all of that, and it's fantastic to have a ball in consistent areas just for you to get used to that ball coming into off stump or just missing off stump, so you can increase your ability to make those decisions. But also sidearms nowadays, I have a session where I'll literally pick out a point behind the stumps and I will bowl either side of that point, and the aim being to get the ball into the top of off stump or just outside as much as I can, and I'll literally bowl for a whole session at somebody. And yes, I'll over pitch, which they can drive, and yes, I'll under pitch, which they can back foot drive as they go through the net, so they can still score. But my aim will be to get the ball in and around there to increase their ability of judgment, there to leave the right balls, to play the right balls, and we'll have that session. And it sounds a little bit old-fashioned in this game that we play nowadays, but we look back at that innings that Kohli played against the Pakistan lads at the in the warm-up for the 2020, where it was an unbelievable battle between him and Amir when he first came into to bat, and we saw some wonderful leaves in that in a very short period of play. If he'd have played some of those balls that Amir was bowling right at the beginning, he probably wouldn't have got more than five or six, and then it would have been a fascinating game of cricket. But he left a few, he played the right ones, his judgment was like in test matches for that little period of time, and then all of a sudden he went bang 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 and the game was won. So even in the shortest game, there may be the opportunity to lead the ball. It's a skill to practice, and this is where your delivery skills on sidearms or your delivery skills as a thrower, as a coach, is so important to be able to get this fine, fine skill that we're seeing, not so much in the game, being really good in your plays.
And that leave does, a good leave does show that you are in complete control. You know, it's if you've decided to leave one because the bowler's offered it so, too far outside of the off stump, and you leave it and you look in total control, then there's a good chance that the bowler's going to try and adjust and then put one on your legs and you can knock it away much easier. So it's definitely a good skill to have in any format. But do help me feel a little bit, Gareth. You do put the odd one on middle stump when you're trying to do that, right? It's not complete perfect line every time, right?
No, I think the fact that I'm not completely perfect will allow that the odd ball goes on leg stump,
oh,
or the
God.
Odd ball will go here and there. And also, of course, you're often using a bag of balls, aren't you? And they can all react differently through the air. So you get that natural variation anyway. But there's a couple of sessions where all I'm doing is just trying to be as stingy as I possibly can, rather than just feeding in the licorice all sorts, because it's really good that they get that discipline. Going back to your point before about that leave, I think the best leaver that I ever had the pleasure of throwing balls at or coaching was Ricky Ponting. And yeah, the way that he used to leave the ball was amazing. He used to literally jump at the bowler. And I think the message that he told me and told the kids when he was coaching them was that every time I leave the ball, I want to tell the bowler that at some point in my innings, that ball you just bowled me, I'm going to drive for four. So he used to literally jump with his front foot out to get to it. And it was sent a brilliant message back to the bowler.
Yeah, it's a big difference, isn't it, when it looks like you've chosen not to hit it rather than just sort of watch it go by. Yeah. Next question is from Bassett. And Bassett says, I'm an average batsman with no coaching. I used to have a very good onside play, but two or three hits at my body have forced me to become an offside player. My feet don't move when the ball is on leg or middle stump. Recently, trials were held at our college in which there was a really quick bowler who stood really tall. He was constantly bowling me on leg stump as I was mostly walking away to the off stump or taking balls on my body. Also, I was unable to pick up his length. Any advice would be of great help. What can we do for Bassett?
Well, it sounds like a little bit of confidence needs to come back, doesn't it? He's obviously had the ability, so he can be pretty sure that it's not something that's unachievable, because it's something he's been able to do before a little bit. But this does happen, doesn't it? And you get a knock, or maybe even nick a ball off outside, off stump, and maybe you lose a little bit of confidence in your ability to play that shot as well. So definitely something that a lot of us have been through. I can't imagine anyone who's played cricket for a decent period of time hasn't been hit. Whether the pitches are quick or slow, they still find a way to get hit on the inner thigh or hit on the body somewhere. And it's something we just have to live with, really. But once it does happen, you've got to find your way of getting back to where you want to be, or even getting beyond where you were previously, so it doesn't happen again. So how do we go about rebuilding confidence? Well, I guess we've got to look at why did he get hit in the first place? So what's potentially caused the issue? And if it was a freak incident, the ball's moved around, or maybe he's got himself into a bad position, then we can think about that. But I guess taking away a little bit of the speed, first of all, and taking away a little bit of the risk is a good way to start thinking about getting him back in good positions and getting him believing in his own ability. One of the great things that we do quite a lot of is just whacking balls with whacking tennis balls around and getting guys confident in their position again, so they're able to get into position, and then obviously using a bowling machine gives gives batsmen a little bit more confidence as well. When it comes to being comfortable or confident that the ball is going to go in a specific place. Now, after that, there is the transition out of it, and we need to kind of believe that we can do the same thing against a bowler in a live situation where there's potentially a little bit of uncertainty. And obviously having someone who can throw a ball at a kind of match pace, whether it's sidearm or a throw. And as we talked about, Gara's there. If you can have that ability to hit a channel or hit a specific area over and over again, then that's a good starting point for a batter to know there's a ball coming in a certain area, and then they can gradually build up towards the randomness again of where they want to end up. But I think the first issue is admitting that there's something you need to be aware of, be rebuilding, and a lot of guys will just kind of put the blinkers on and say they're fine. So it's great that you've identified this is a problem for you, and it's great that you want to fix it. Work out where your starting point's going to be on that kind of chain, and then off you go. And hopefully we'll find that if, as long as you have a little structured plan of getting from A to B, then give it a few weeks of working through that process, and you should find yourself getting in better position again. And hopefully next time it comes in that body, you're in behind it with the batter, or you're knocking it into the leg side, or whatever it might be.
Gareth, is there any drill work that you do with a player who's lost a bit of confidence when the ball is coming towards them?
There are heaps of things that you can do, and I completely agree with Sam. It's all about layering up confidence and competence at the same time. It's something that we did yesterday, actually, when I delivered batting on the level three. And one of the best drills for this is something called the torch drill. And I'm going to write about it, and it'll be up there at the end of this week. So have a look at that document. I'll put some video in there as well. And it's a brilliant drill. Effectively, we start it with tennis balls, and you get somebody to underarm from the floor up towards your body. And the first intention that you've got is to try and shine the end of the bat handle at the ball like a torch. And the aim being to let the tennis ball, put yourself in a position where your bat handle actually hits the ball. So that's what you're trying to do. You're shining the torch at the end of your bat handle, and you're trying to hit the ball with the end of your bat. Okay. And what that does is it replicates the positions that our hands get into when we're going to pull. And then the last thing that happens, obviously, is the bat comes round and hits. It's something that you do in baseball to increase the baseball swing as well. It's a magnificent drill. And what it does is it proves to a young player or a player that's struggling against it that actually, if I can be really precise and I can hit the ball with the end of my cricket bat, then surely if I then go to hit it with the cricket bat, it'll be great. So you hit three of those balls on the end of the bat handle, and then the fourth one you whack. Because the reason why you're getting into trouble here is all you're doing is fearing the ball. You're not wanting to dominate the ball. So you've got to change that relationship. And through doing this drill, it's a fantastic way to do it. So have a look out on the site. It's going to be this week's article. It's called the Torch Drill, and it's absolutely brilliant.
And now we are going to have this week's soapbox, a 60-second uninterrupted rant, chat, or monologue from one of the team. And this week, it's Mark Garraway. So, Garraz, what have you got for us?
Well, this week, as I said, I'm out in the West Indies and working on a level three out here. And we've got some of the legends and brilliant names within West Indies cricket working. Now, they haven't had coaching courses out here very often. And these guys, irrespective of how brilliant they've been in their own careers, have come here with a thirst for knowledge, asking questions, wanting to learn, and they've absorbed so much this week. It's been unreal. So just to give you an example of a clientele on this course, Courtney Walsh, if I can read you out some of his bowling stats. This guy, Courtney Walsh, got 519 test wickets, 227 ODI wickets, 1,807 first-class wickets, and 551 List A game wickets. I mean, that's absolutely bonkers, but Courtney has been learning all through the week, giving out his views as well, but just wanting to absorb stuff. Tony Gray averaged, when he played test cricket, he averaged 17 with the ball in Test cricket and 18.97 with the ball in ODIs, which is bonkers. You know, he got a wicket every 28 balls when he played ODI cricket, which is just crazy, and was in that era where he didn't get to play very much because they had a procession of fast bowlers around that time. But what's that? You know, Winston Benjamin played heaps of county cricket, yet their just thirst for knowledge is wonderful. And sometimes when I travel around the world, I see coach education being done in a plain way and people not engaging in it. But these guys have absolutely loved it. So you watch West Indies cricket continue to fly in one-day cricket, but I bet we see them doing some more stuff in Test cricket in about 10 years' time once kids have learned from these absolute legends of the game.
And that is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. We are going to head off, but before we do that, just a couple of little pieces of housekeeping for you. First of all, the prize winner this week, the online coaching course from PitchVision at pitchvision.com. And that is competed for between Alex and his question about judging outside off stump and Bazip's question about the ball at his body. So which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
Again, two brilliant questions. I'm loving our questions at the moment. Thanks very much for everybody sending them in. But I'm going to go with Bassett's question this week. You know, I think the drills that we gave, and in particular linking into the one that you're going to see on the site, is Bassett this week. Fantastic.
And congratulations to you. That's an online coaching course on its way to you. And if someone else was listening, Gareth, and they were interested in getting that course, and at the very least getting a question answered by us, how could they send a question in to us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. You can also get us on social media. Our Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. And our Twitter is @pitchvisionacad. And you can also listen to the show every week if you want to do that. It's free and it comes out every Friday. And you can just go into your favourite podcast app on your phone or your tablet or your computer. Do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. And if you want to get the show notes or you want to stream the show online from your web browser, you can do all that by going to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link there. And you have all the details for all the old show. You can download, stream, do whatever you want to do there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, guys.